The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening again. So tonight I'd want to build a little bit on what I talked about in the guided meditation, that is the changing nature of our experiences. I'll start here that in the biography of the Buddha, such as it is, there isn't like one concise autobiography. Instead, the Buddha used a little bit of his biographical details to make a point. So he didn't tell his life story in order to tell his life story. Just use it as examples to help support his teaching. So some of the passages that are preserved or that the tradition holds, of course we don't know the veracity of these things, but the tradition holds that there's some stories around the first students of the Buddha. Of course, there wouldn't be any Buddhism unless there were some students who heard the teachings and preserved them. And if you know the story of the Buddha's awakening, you know that he practiced with these five ascetics doing some extreme self-mortification or asceticism and to the point of starvation. And the Buddha discovered that didn't work and he went off a different direction. And then after he became awakened, he wanted to teach them. He wanted to find those group of five ascetics again and to share with them what he had discovered, what had helped him become awakened. And of those five ascetics, one of them became awakened, at least the first touch of awakening or first experience of awakening when hearing the Buddha teach. His name was Kundanya. And right after Kundanya's awakening experience, he exclaims, "Whatever is subject to arising is subject to cessation. Whatever arises passes away." So this is like the first thing that he said after he had this awakening experience. So clearly there's some importance there about seeing the arising and passing away. And then interestingly, so after teaching the five ascetics, interestingly, the Buddha then teaches Yasa, who is like the exact opposite of the five ascetics. He's a rich merchant and living a very opulent lifestyle. And the conditions are such that he and the Buddha's paths cross. The Buddha gives him some teachings. Yasa, just like the Kundanya and the other ascetics, has some awakening experience. And he exclaims the same thing. Whatever is subject to arising is subject to sensation. So clearly, there's something about seeing this arising and passing. And another pointer to the importance of seeing the arising and passing is in the Satipatthana Sutta. Some of you may be familiar that this is the primary discourse, this is the primary teaching of the Buddha, where creating the foundations for mindfulness are discussed or taught or shared. It's a kind of a long sutta, a long discourse that has a number of different practices in there. But there's a refrain. There's kind of like the chorus, you might think, that gets repeated, you know, after each new instruction. And in this refrain, in this chorus, gets repeated, I believe, 13 times in this sutta, is the instruction to notice the nature of arising and passing away. So it's more like the nature of arising and passing away. So this includes that we can notice that maybe we don't have to be mindful of every precise moment of when something arises or the precise moment when something passes away, but we can notice, oh yeah, this wasn't here a minute ago, or wait, this is here, what happened to that? So there can be a little bit of a retrospective analysis, this recognition that, oh, things are arising and passing, even if we're not noticing the exact precise moment when a particular phenomenon has arisen or passed away. But the instructions are to notice that they have the nature to arise and pass away. So of course, if you've been in the Buddhist scene for a while, you'll know that I'm talking about impermanence, anicca. And generally when we think of impermanence, or often I should say, we focus on the challenging aspect of it. That is that we're apt to lose those things that are important to us and that are dear to us. Or maybe when we think about things that are impermanent, it implies that they're all going to end at some time. But there also are some real benefits that can arise from when we see the arising and passing away, when we see the impermanent nature of things. And sometimes we might overlook this positive side of seeing things. And one of benefit, of course, is that it puts things in perspective. I know for me, when my father died, it put a lot of things in perspective, kind of like my priorities shifted, the way that I thought about things shifted. And if you've had somebody in your life die, maybe you've had the same experience. So recognizing that the impermanent nature of things can really help us appreciate what we do have, and also serve as a wake-up call for us to think about our priorities and maybe to articulate maybe a little bit more clearly what's important to us. And the Buddha knew about this. There was, when he was talking to a king, he gave this simile. And talking to a king, he's not going to give the usual Dharma talk that you should meditate a lot and practice renunciation, right? That's, a king isn't going to do that. Instead, he gives this simile. What do you think? If a person were to come to you from the east and say, "Great king, you should know this. I am coming from the east, and there I saw a great mountain, high as the clouds, coming this way. It's crushing all living beings in its path. So do whatever you think should be done, great king." And then another messenger comes from the south, and then another messenger comes from the west, and then another messenger comes from the north. All of them are saying, there is this great mountain, high as the clouds, coming this way, crushing all living beings. And then the Buddha asks the king, so what would you do if you received these four different messengers that were saying this? And the king replies, if such a great peril should arise, such a terrible destruction of human life, what else should be done but to live by the Dharma and to do wholesome deeds? This is very different for a king who's, commentary says that he had, before receiving this teaching from the Buddha, was just sentencing some criminals and, was doing something that it's not usually what we think of as wholesome deeds and living by according to the Dharma. So even this king recognized that, of course, these great mountains are death or time, some way we might understand it. So in this way, that recognizing impermanence, another benefit might be that, of course, it allows growth and development to happen. Right, if everything was perfectly static, there would be no ability to practice and to gain some skills and learn and gain some expertise. And on some level, this seems so obvious and maybe it shouldn't even be stated. But it's fundamental to human growth this quality of impermanence. But maybe one more thing that I'll say here is about a benefit is that the things change prevents things from becoming stultifying or static, or we might feel like that we want some security, we want some stability, we want things to just finally settle down and to be stable. But we often might also discover that when we do manage to find some temporary security or some steadiness or some stability, before too long, that very security might become claustrophobic or kind of a prison or stultifying, stifling. And then we might all of a sudden be desperate to escape from, right, if things were always the same. Always the same. So it brings some freshness and it brings some energy or some dynamism into our life, into our experience. But maybe the greatest benefit arises from seeing impermanence, seeing anicca on deeper and deeper levels. Some great wisdom can arise. So what does this mean to see impermanence on deeper and deeper levels? We can say that what I was just talking about is what we might see in our daily life, certainly doesn't require any meditation practice and certainly isn't unique to Buddhism to recognize the changing nature of our experience. But just as Kondanya and Yasa, the first students of the Buddha, first followers, if we sit with our experience and we begin to examine it, what we start to see is not just the content of our experience, the agitation or the settledness or maybe the sadness or the excitement or maybe the longing or love, happiness, all these things, right, that kind of like flow through our experience. So not only do we start to see the content, like the details, but we also start to see the underlying quality. As I was talking about with the instructions with the Satipatthana Sutta. So if we kind of like rest in the space of awareness that knows the play of experience, but we're not lost in our experience, or we're not always reactive to it, that instead of the, I like this, I don't like that, or I need more of this, I need less of that. Not because that's wrong particularly, but because that's not where freedom lies. Instead, we're just getting pushed around as the things are changing. And it also puts us at odds with the way things are. If we're always trying to, I want more of this, or I don't want any more of this. Because the way things are, if you pay attention, right, and is that they're arising and passing away. So our experience can be like a river of experience of things that are moving through, as opposed to like grabbing on and pushing it away or maybe like pulling it closer. We can see this like a flow of experiences. So often we could see that in daily life. Maybe we could see that in our meditation. But also in our meditation practice, we might start to notice when things arise. We might, when we're doing with the Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on the establishing of mindfulness, the instructions to notice the arising and to notice the passing and both arising and passing. It's very common that in the beginning, what's most predominant is just to notice what's new. What's fresh? Like, oh, that pain in my knee. just grabs our attention and becomes compelling. And part of the reason why it becomes compelling is because it's new. It's just arisen. It's compelling because it's uncomfortable too, but the new things tend to grab our attention. In the same way that when we like open up our awareness to the paying attention to the experience of sounds, it's like the new sounds that we see are the ones that that grab our attention. And we just, at the beginning of practice, we just tend to avoid or simply not notice the endings of things. The way things are passing away. Yes, sure, things are arising, but of course things are passing away also. And they just don't escape our notice. Like it's a little bit of out of sight, out of mind. Or we're so busy with what's new and maybe a distraction that we don't even notice the endings. And maybe even with the present moment, in daily life, some of the experiences that we might notice with impermanence, we might think, well, okay, yeah, driving my car, I see that I'm doing all these different experiences are all changing, the visual field is changing, but that mountain over there isn't changing. But of course, I mean, if we think about it, right, every time any being, any creature, any person walks on the mountain, the dirt, the gravel, it's only going one way, right? It's going down, downhill with gravity. So, of course, there's a way in which mountains are also kind of like ending also. So even those things that might feel really stable and don't catch our attention because they're not arising, but we might not even think that they're ending, that they're ceasing. So we can, as part of our meditation practice, to counter this unbalanced view of where we're only seeing the beginnings of things, we can intentionally set the intention to also see the endings, to see the passing away. And we might not see that precise moment when it's passing away, but we can see maybe just a few moments later, oh yeah, it's no longer there. Kind of with a little bit of memory, just notice this kind of retrospective, oh yeah, this used to be here and it's no longer here. And then as the mind starts to settle and get even more quiet, perhaps being on a retreat, perhaps having experienced some concentration, we notice something else as our recognition of impermanence gets even deeper. And we might notice that things are inconstant as well as being impermanent. I understand impermanent as meaning things are going to end. But we could say inconstant this means that they're not steady, that there's a flashing in and out of experience, there's a fluttering, there's a flickering. And so things, if with a really steady mind, we can start to see this, how things are arising and passing and arising and passing, that there, nothing is as solid as it might seem with the ordinary non-meditative mind. And this word anicca, which often gets translated as impermanent, could just as well be translated as inconstant. So to see the lack of stability or the lack of steadiness and all of our experiences, and in some way we could also understand that all objects we could classify as experiences, because how would we know there's an object unless it was being experienced, like either through the visual eye, through the visual field, or maybe it's experienced as a thought or it's an idea. So Sometimes this, what I'm pointing to, might be a little bit more obvious when we're not meditating, or maybe at the beginning of when we're still getting settled, with pain. There might be a way in which the encouragement, when there's some uncomfortable feelings, uncomfortable bodily sensations, to bring our attention to them. We can see that and bring our attention to them and to notice, is it stabbing? Is it throbbing? Is it cold? Maybe it's hot. And exactly where is it? Is the area in which those experiences are arising, is it getting bigger, is it getting smaller, or does it have really precise boundaries? And we might notice, as we do that inquiry, as we look into this experience of pain, it's not so easy. Maybe what at first experience seems like it's this really dull, throbbing sensation, when we really rest our awareness there, when we have a little bit of inquiry, we realize, oh, it's not as solid. There are some areas of the body that aren't throbbing right there, and maybe some areas that are. And maybe it's not quite so clear exactly the circumference, the perimeter of where that experience is. So when we try to pinpoint it with some real precision, it might seem kind of slippery, like, oh, it's here. Oh, no, wait, it's over there. Or it feels like this, but wait, it's like that. So as our mind starts to settle, we start to see that actually all of our experiences are like that. That there's some flickering or flashing or maybe even pixelated or some kind of not the solid and stable way that things are experienced with our ordinary, with our way that we are maybe driving our car or going around the neighborhood or something. And then maybe with this experience, but there can be even some deeper recognitions of impermanence that really help support some wisdom. And this, the recognition that, oh, all these experiences are flickering, they're not as solid as I was thinking they were when I tried to pinpoint them. They're not really there. Well, what is solid? What is steady? And we might discover that it's only concepts. It's only ideas that are steady, that are solid, that are stable. It's only our ideas about things, about experiences. It's only the concepts, it's only the labels that we put on them. That's the only things that's stable. Again, a good example is this word pain. Pain. It's the same word. Maybe we could say it with some different inflection. Pain. Pain. But it's the same word. But that word gets placed on top of such a broad range of experiences. And these experiences aren't steady. So it turns out that this is so what's true for all of our experiences. So when the mind is really settled and really quiet, we can see that it's only our concepts that are steady. And usually when the mind is this quiet, means that where there's concentration. And when there's this level of concentration, there's also a sense of well-being. They go together. That you can't have this level of settledness in the mind. I'll use this word concentration, samadhi, unless there's also some certain amount of well-being, some happiness, some equanimity, some ease. And then when there is that level of ease and this level of well-being and this level of settledness, it's only under those conditions that we can start to see how things are really not as stable. This is part of the reason that some well-being is an integral part of meditation practice, so that seeing the unsteady nature of our experiences, that our experiences have the nature to arise and pass away, is not disturbing or uncomfortable, but we see it with a mind that has some understanding and can take it in as some wisdom. And that can really support us on our way to greater and greater freedom. Because it becomes so clear, oh yes, if everything is changing, flickering, flashing in and out of experience, we might have to see this 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, and concentrated mind and unconcentrated mind. If things are not as steady as we think they are, then it just doesn't make sense to hold on to them. It just doesn't make sense to be clinging, to grabbing, to be attached to them, because they're changing. And then it's just natural. It's just natural that there's a letting go. And then with this letting go, there's greater freedom. And the more the mind is able to let go, the greater and greater freedom there is. Until there's the complete letting go, that is awakening. And then like Kondanya and Yasa, the first Buddhist students, can say, oh, everything that is subject to arising is subject to cessation. So may you, with whether you see the impermanence on your in your daily life, whether you see the arising of things, or maybe you see sometimes just the passing of things, or maybe you start to see in more deeper ways with a quieter and quieter mind that might not be available until you have some opportunity to do some extended practice. But may it be an opportunity for you to notice that it just doesn't make sense to hold on to those things that are changing, and for us to let go and to feel the freedom that arises when we let go. Thank you.